And so I wanted to have a really nimble company that was very profitable and that could grow fast and that I could travel, because that was one thing that I wasn't able to do that much with my first company. My family is from California, and I wanted to see my nieces and nephews grow up. And being stuck in New York all the time, that was kind of impossible. There's so many ways that you can have a successful jewelry business and grow and scale and bring home the kind of money that you want and have a business that's location independent if you set it up the right way.
We stand today.
The Business Method.
The Business with Method. Shadow.
The Business Method.
The Business Method Podcast.
The Business Method Podcast featuring Chris Reynolds. Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics for location independence.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm your host, Chris Reynolds, and welcome to the Business Method Podcast, a podcast featuring successful entrepreneurs and high-profile people dissecting their online and location-independent business models. We dissect the different methods, tools, and tactics of high-performance online entrepreneurs and high-caliber people in a series format. On our first series, we interviewed 100 entrepreneurs in 100 days that had built businesses creating $100,000 or more annually. On our second series, we are interviewing 100 entrepreneurs that have built location-independent businesses that generate $1 million or more in annual revenue. There's a growing movement of people building these caliber of businesses, and we are getting behind the minds, the logic, and the science of what it takes to build businesses like this. On top of that, we also gather entrepreneurs at events and retreats around the world. This October, we are having our annual event in Thailand, Get Shit Done Live. It's 10 days of high-performance productivity, targeted collaboration, and rapid execution designed for entrepreneurs to get a lot of work done in a little amount of time. Some say it's like 10 months of work in 10 days. There's a magic that happens when brilliant minds come together to push one another towards productive execution. That is exactly what this retreat is about. Check out all the details at thebusinessmethod.com. That is thebusinessmethod.com. Now, let's jump in today's show.
The Business Method.
Welcome back to the Business Method Podcast, listeners. And today we introduce our next guest, Tracy Matthews. Tracy runs a full-on location independent jewelry business and 800-person jewelry community called Flourish and Thrive Academy. After years in the jewelry business, Tracy then decided she wanted to help other entrepreneurs in the industry and create a place where jewelry entrepreneurs can learn and grow their businesses together. Today on the show, we chat in depth about how Tracy structures her business and how she structures her life. We discuss lessons from losing a business and starting over, creating systems when you're not a systems person, and the difference between the 5, 6, and 7-figure mindsets. It's a great show, you guys, with an incredible entrepreneur. And without further ado, let's welcome Tracy to the show.
Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics.
And you guys, I'm excited and really happy to welcome Tracy Matthews to the show. Tracy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome. It's really early in the morning, and I was telling you that I don't usually take calls or interviews before 8 a.m., but here we are, or before 10 a.m., I should say, and here we are at 8, so it's awesome to be.
I'm flattered that you would take our interview early in the morning when you don't normally. But also excited, because you sound excited to be on the podcast this morning. So are you normally excited in the morning, and do you have a lot of energy?
I do. I'm a total morning person. And that's part of the reason why I don't take calls very early, because that's my time to be like creative and get stuff done and to think and come up with ideas. So I'm like pretty like pumped right now. Some coffee too. So I'm good to go.
What's some of your secrets? What's some of your morning rituals that you use to get you excited and going in the morning?
Yeah, so I just wrote this book because one of my students actually recommended it to me, called The 5-Second Rule. I actually listened to it because I only do audiobooks these days because of I don't have time to sit down and read, but I can listen while I'm doing other things. Mm-hmm. And the premise is basically like when your alarm sounds off, you count backwards, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you just get out of bed. And if you're like hesitating or procrastinating on something, you can use that same 5-second rule. And it helps like create this shift in your mind that just like wakes you up. So I did that this morning when my alarm went off at 6:15. My morning ritual is to like get up, drink a bunch of water. I usually have to pee in the morning, which is normal for most people, but, and then, you know, I just make my coffee and I sit. I have this beautiful apartment in New York City, that I spend time in when I'm here, and I look out the window and write in my journal, set my timer for like 15 minutes to 30 minutes and write and think and you know, take notes about things that I want to do and then get my day started. And this day in particular is I had a really great idea. So I already wrote an email to send it to my list today for a promotion we're doing to like help us get over the next level of followers on Instagram. So it's been a productive morning and I'm already talking to you on the podcast.
So do you use the 5-second rule every day of the week, even on the weekends?
I just started using it. So okay. I can't say the answer is yes now. But I hope to if I seem to need it. Oh, and the other thing I do is I usually work out. So after this, I'm going to go work out.
Okay, cool.
And then get my day started. Yeah.
I used to do, after grad school, I did a summer internship selling books, educational books, door to door. And our first goal of the day or task of the day was after the alarm went off, we had 12 seconds to until our feet hit the floor. And then we would go and we would take a cold shower or a cold bath in the morning.
Oh,
which
so good.
Was great to wake you up. Yeah. But I haven't implemented that in a long time. Actually, my goal these days is to get more rest. So I don't even set the alarm clock. And I'm actually sleeping 9 hours, which for a person that sleeps 6.5 to 7 hours, that's, you know, it's strange for me. So I'm enjoying it, but I know it won't last. I'll eventually go back to the 7 hours of sleep.
Yeah, I'm like a 7 hours of sleep person. You know, I usually wake up before my alarm. It's yeah. To me, it's more of a safety net or safety yes. blanket. I feel like if I don't set it, that it's like more of like a security to me. It's very rare that the alarm wakes me up, to be honest.
Can you tell yourself when you're going to wake up? Can you tell your mind like, oh, Tracy, wake up at 6:55 or 7 o'clock?
You know, I just... I'm a morning person. And so I yeah. really try to not stay out too late. It's sometimes hard when I'm in New York City or at conferences like Baby Bathwater where you stay up like super late.
Yeah.
But I had the time difference working for me there because I will still wake up almost at the same time, even if I go to bed 3 hours later. So for me to feel rested, like it's really important to try to go to bed at the same time yeah. because I naturally wake up early. And the only exception to that is that my body knows when it's the weekend. So I'll sleep till like 8, usually on the weekends.
Very cool. Well, we're really excited to have you here today. And I know a bit about you, but I definitely want you to share your story more in depth because I know you have some powerful lessons you've learned over the years building your business to where it is now. And so I just want to give the mic to you for a couple of minutes and learn how you became the entrepreneur that you are today.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so I started out as an entrepreneur in the 90s, if you can believe that. I was, long story short, my mom passed away and I was taking a hiatus from school. And when that happened, I decided to make a little bit of a life change and like a career direction change. And I took this humanities major and I wanted to be like kind of go into fine arts. And the reason why I took the humanities major focused on European studies was because I could take art classes as electives. And there's a longer backstory to that. It doesn't really matter. But my first class was a jewelry making class. And I knew I would probably like it, but I didn't expect to be so good at it, which was kind of random. So all my electives were filled with jewelry making classes. And that and my teacher at the time really mentored me and said it was like really that was really in the 90s, like the early 90s was when the independent jewelry scene started happening. Most people think of it as the rise of Etsy, like many, many years later, but that's really when it was started. And I really looked up to some of the designers in the industry at the time, Karen Karch and Erica Courtney, who kind of inspired me to think like, oh, I think I could do this. Their jewelry's so cool. Like I can make my own style of jewelry and sell stores. And so that's sort of how it started. And I come from a long line of entrepreneurs. My grandfather was a very successful entrepreneur and started a fast food chain. I don't talk about that very often, but it's kind of cool. And most of my siblings, like I would say the majority of them have either their own business or entrepreneurial. So it's been an interesting, definitely an interesting ride. So I launched that company, my first company in 1998. And throughout the course of that business, I learned a lot about like what to do and what not to do, especially in a jewelry business. And it was awesome. I was sold in over 350 stores around the world. I built that business close to $1 million in sales. I can't say we crossed the $1 million mark, but we were so close. And then the next year was 2008. And that year took me down. Let's just put it that way.
Were you in California or New York at that time?
Part of it was in San Francisco. I was living in San Francisco when I started my business. I grew up in Southern California. I went to school in LA and at Loyola Marymount. That's where I learned how to make jewelry. And then I got married after college. And we moved to San Francisco because that's where the opportunity was and the dot-com boom. And our friends were there, so why not? Mm-hmm. So I was living in San Francisco when I started my business. And then moved to New York in 2006. With several employees that were working with me. I moved my company there, which was crazy. So yeah, so 2008 happened in New York City, a very expensive place to be living and running a business. And at that time was the first kind of like foray into sort of starting a partial virtual team, but I did have people working in my office space, in my studio space, making jewelry, helping me run the company, et cetera. But let's see. When 2008 happened, it's a lot of people got crushed, and I was one of them because many of the companies that I had trusted for many years to sell my product filed for bankruptcy and left me with a ton of bad debt, which kind of forced my company into bankruptcy because I had to make some tough choices. Like, do I really want to try and restructure this because it's going to be so much work? And I'm not even sure if we'd be able to pay off all this debt. So I decided to close the business and move into a new direction. And so with that being said, I knew I wanted to continue designing jewelry. And I had a friend who asked me to design an engagement ring for her, or her engagement ring. And I loved it. And the thing that I loved about it was that it really got me back not only to designing, but to being creative and working with the customers, because I'm a natural salesperson. I love that. And really kind of digging deep into what it is that was important to them and what they valued, and being able to take that information and kind of infuse it into the designs I was doing. So I started over with a new business model, and I knew that one thing that I wanted to do was to not have employees, because that was something that the hardest part of closing my business was having to lay people off and feel like this huge sense of guilt that I'd relocated them and now they didn't have a job in this expensive city. And so I wanted to create a really nimble company that was very profitable and that could grow fast, and that I could travel, because that was one thing that I wasn't able to do that much with my first company, was that my family is from California and most of them were there except for my one sister who's here. And I wanted to see my nieces and nephews grow up, and being stuck in New York all the time, that was kind of impossible. Mm-hmm. So that happened. I started getting designers asking for consulting, because my business just kind of exploded. I'd grown this company to close to $1 million in sales, but I'd never really been able to take home much of the money because a lot of it was going back into the company. And so when I restarted, I ramped up really quickly and had my first month of $30,000 in profits. And I was just like, what the heck? This is awesome. And so I wanted to start showing people how to do that in my industry, in the jewelry industry, and or build a company that really was successful, but based on what they wanted in their life. Because I think at that time in my industry, there was like this one way. And then Etsy came around, and then people just saw that as the way. And there's so many ways that you can have a successful jewelry business and grow and scale and bring home, you know, the kind of money that you want, and have a business that's location independent if you set it up the right way. So right. That's sort of my jam.
Awesome. Let's go back to when you closed your first business, because you started out your business in the 90s and you built it up to be successful in New York City. So I'm sure you had a great lifestyle. And so I'm curious, like, that 2008 recession hit me pretty hard too, and hit my first business to the point where I went absolutely broke. And I was living in Phoenix at the time, so that's why I asked where you were living, to see if you were in Southern California and if the market had a similar effect on you. But what was that like for you, having a business that you built up to around seven figures, and then all of a sudden, just because of the economy, it crushes it and you have to start all over?
Well, it was a couple things. And I had, you know, two of my siblings were living in Arizona at the time. So they got crushed too. They're both in housing. And actually I had one of my investments like totally went dead. It was a bummer because I was like so excited about it, but whatever. what was that like? I mean, quite honestly, it was devastating because I think, you know, at the time I was dating this guy and he worked in finance. We were kind of dating on and off and he kept saying like, doomsday is coming. And I was just saying like, thinking to him, like, you're so negative, like, just be positive and everything will, everything will just flow into place. And that was working for me for a while. You know, I didn't know enough about like what could potentially happen to really understand it. But I felt, you know, part of it was how I probably set my business up and how I was leading my team. But, you know, obviously the circumstances were the biggest part of it because, you know, my main customers were stores and they were going out of business. And so to me, you know, in the beginning when the decline started happening, I took it like I sucked as a designer because my sales were slowing. And I realized later that it really had nothing to do, not as much to do with me and my talent as design as it really had to do with the market in general and to be able to see and forecast those things. So, I mean, I think the housing crash affected everyone because it had this crazy trickle down effect of people being able to buy. You know, so many people were underwater on their homes and had to close. Like, I was so grateful at that point that I decided not to buy something because I had multiple friends who were underwater on their houses and basically went into foreclosure and or were just paying more than their house was even worth. So it was like devastating in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Do you still talk to that guy you were dating? I'm curious what his prediction for the next economic crash is.
I don't, but there are a lot of finance people here. What people have been saying is something's going to come, but it's just being prepared
right
for it. And will it be as bad? No one knows. It'll be interesting to see. I'm just trying to stock away some cash. I was dating another guy recently who was telling me his story around that time, and he basically just took the year of 2008 off and went and lived on a beach because
genius.
Yeah. Cause he's like, nothing's happening here. I might as well just like,
enjoy. Yeah. Get your money out of the market, live on the beach for a couple of years and come back, start over.
Yeah, totally.
Not a bad plan whatsoever. So when you were going through that, did you have to change your lifestyle or were you okay financially to where you could keep going?
I totally had to change my lifestyle. I didn't have to move. I was still living in the same apartment, but it was a really scary time for me. I started teaching. So I was a yoga teacher when I was in San Francisco, but I've always practiced and taught yoga more for fun and as a hobby. And it's a long story because I feel like when you're taken care of by the universe, not to sound so hippy dippy or cheesy, that the right things come along at the right time. It just so happened that about a year before, I was practicing yoga at Equinox when I was visiting my family in Newport Beach, and the teacher didn't show up. It was around Thanksgiving, and I had already retired from teaching yoga, and some student was like, I'll teach the class, and I was like, no thanks. I'm going to leave if that's happening. So I raised my hand. I said, I taught yoga for like 8 years. I'd be happy to pop in and teach this class as long as you don't mind that I practice. So the gym like recruited me to teach. I wasn't living in Newport Beach, so it didn't make sense. But I basically got hired by Equinox in New York City and I was already a member there. So I was like, oh, cool. I get a free membership. So this is going to cut down my expenses. And what I remember about that time was like, I was still had my company. I was teaching yoga just a couple of classes a week. But then I found out if I taught 5 classes a week, I could get health insurance. And that would save my company a ton of money. So I started teaching more. And then when I decided to close the company, I was just picking up a ton of classes. And I was networking with students. I was teaching corporate classes. And I was up to maybe like 15 classes a week. And that's really hard to do. It's hard to give that much energy to other people all the time. But I was so grateful for it because it created this like stability in my life where my rent was covered every month. I had insurance. So if something happened, I wasn't going to be in big trouble. I had some money saved up for the wind down of my company because we had to sell off a lot of inventory. So that kind of floated me until I had my second business kind of going.
Yeah.
And, And, but definitely like my friends were out like summering in the Hamptons. Like I wasn't summering in the Hamptons. I was just like, I was like maybe a guest one weekend, but I wasn't going, like they were going to St. Bart's on these extravagant trips. And I was, you know, sitting in New York on New Year's Eve or going to our family home in Sun Valley, Idaho. Like I wasn't doing the like crazy stuff. There was times when I couldn't even like go out to dinner with my friends. I just meet them for like one glass of wine because that's all I could afford. But
I've been there.
But you know, it's like I knew that I would be able to rebuild. I think that I just needed to get to a place where I felt stable and that I had something going on a side hustle that was going to provide some security. So I had the confidence to continue to kind of going after the dream or the passion. I do remember this one time as I was rebuilding, I got recruited by a $400 million company to design for them. And it had never been in the back of my mind ever to go work for someone. And I remember talking to my dad about this. And I called him up. I was walking down the streets of Soho and I said, hey, you know, I'm walking home from this interview. They want to hire me full time. Like, I don't know about this. And he said to me, I think you should take the job. And I was crushed because I'm like, Dad, you don't believe in me? Because he's like been a serial entrepreneur his entire life. Uh-huh. But as entrepreneurs, we're super resourceful, right? So I was, and I'm a salesperson, and I'm very convincing when I want to be. And I convinced them to hire me part-time freelance. And that was awesome because that was the next bridge that allowed me to kind of design and do what I love. Designing in my aesthetic and style for another company who wanted things that were designed in my style for their collection. And so it was like the perfect win-win because that was like the thing that kind of helped me get to that next step because I was making anywhere from like $3,000 to $5,000 a month with that gig. And that was really helpful to kind of help me ramp up and build and continue to focus on getting more clients for my custom jewelry business and to continue moving forward.
What are some of the biggest lessons you took from losing your business?
Well, I think, so I mentioned this earlier, like one of the reasons why I felt so guilty when I had to lay people off at Tracy Matthews Designs was that they had moved to New York City to be with me. It was expensive to live there. I couldn't raise their salary a ton, you know, moving there. And I had to let them go. And they were really dependent on that. And so there's a couple of things like tied into that is that when I started my new custom jewelry business and then when I started Flourish and Thrive Academy, which we didn't really talk about that much, but when I started that company, that my education business, I knew that I didn't want to have an office space because there was a lot of overhead there. I knew that I wanted to have flexibility in my hiring and team. So I knew I didn't want like to have employees, at least and now I'm considering hiring an employee, but I still have a completely virtual team. I knew that for production, because a lot of what I had in-house were production workers and our production manager and people making the jewelry, was that I wanted to find a way that I could have my manufacturing outsourced, but it's in small scale. And so I spent a lot of time like really like working out how this would work, sourcing people locally in New York and beyond, finding people who would just work on an as-needed basis. And I built my entire production that way and it was awesome. And so I think that, the other lesson I learned from that is that one of my biggest struggles building my first business was that I had amazing people working for me, but I wasn't really leading them to be successful in their roles because I am an ultimate visionary. Like if anyone here has ever read the book Rocket Fuel, and if you haven't, definitely read it because you need to know if you're a visionary or an integrator. I'm the ultimate visionary. I'm highly creative. I have ideas like every 5 seconds. They call me a systems breaker because of my Colby score. Like I hate creating systems. I don't even really need them. It's just like I can take an idea, run with it, and put it into action really quickly. And I don't need to think about the rest of the stuff very much. And not many people are like me. They're not that like high on quick start and that like highly creative visionary. And but there are a lot of us out there that are like in that spectrum where they're scoring like, you know, 90th percentile of that. And what I knew is that what I didn't realize was how devastating it was to the people who worked for me and my sister, who was actually my operations manager at the time. from having not being a great leader and not really setting her up for success to lead the team and not setting the boundaries and the parameters. And so I was consistently sucked into managing people, which is not my forte or skill set. I'm terrible at it. Like, you got to manage people when you're running a company, but at the same time, like, empowering your team to actually like own their roles instead of being interrupted all the time. And I felt that that was a huge problem in my first company. So I really strove out to set and empower the people that work for me now to work independently, to be problem solvers and thinkers, and to change the way I'm showing up. And I'm human, so I make a lot of mistakes all the time, but to really try and empower them to figure out the answer before they come to me with the question, and to be solutions oriented, because that was huge. I was going to say,
go ahead.
And I think the other thing, I talk about being a systems breaker, which is true. And so we've had to create now, like, I have this company, Flourish and Thrive Academy. We are, we've already crossed in a 12 month period. We've already crossed the $1 million mark, but we're on our roll this year, this financial year, to hit somewhere between 1.2 and 1.5 in revenue because of the way we've structured the business now and the way we're kind of building our community, which has been awesome. But like, one of our goals over the last several years has really been to document our way of doing things, because I have like bigger goals for the company. Like, I know that I'm going to want to start another business. So that means that this business really needs to run without me. And that requires like strong structure in place, and I'm terrible at it. So like, hire people on my virtual team now who can set those up. And so we found workarounds to help document what I do. And that is a lot of times just creating voice recordings and having those transcribed and creating systems out of that. And then also a system for my team to actually document what they're doing so that we have like this lush, like robust manual. So if, when we hire someone new, like we just hired a new social media person, and our previous social media person she was like one of the best systems people that we had, documented basically like everything that she did so that this new person could jump in and take charge. And then we're just looking at them now and kind of like improving them so that it's like, so that she can be successful in her role without having to ask me a ton of questions, which is awesome.
Sense. Yeah. I'm curious, building a community, a location independent business like this, what do you think are, and not being a systems person, and I know you mentioned some, but are there any other key suggestions you would give to people to create in their systems or to help them create their systems when building a location independent business / community?
Yes. I would say like figure out, and it's really hard for people like me. And if other people can resonate with like a personality like me, like, it's a really helpful, the most that you possibly can is to set structure. It's hard, but set structure. So one of the ways that I've done that is that I've hired someone to actually run the community, because she will be able to say like, okay, Tracy's coming in on Monday at 10:30 a.m. or at noon. Now we're doing them at noon to do the commitment check-in for the group. We know we have office hours on Wednesday afternoon, and then we rotate the people doing office hours. We know which posts are going, which static posts are going, which days. We know how much content we're delivering in the community per month. We know we plan out usually like 2 to 3 months in advance of what we're going to be doing. And then we do our best to like basically just have this wash, rinse, and repeat formula so that Jess can just pop in and take care of it. The other thing is that as the community's grown, like, I get pulled in so many directions all day that I knew that the community was going to fail, especially like at the scale we're building it, if I was the person who had to be the main mentor. So I hired 3 coaches after we got over, I think we got to 500 members, and we make money in a couple of different ways at Flourish and Thrive Academy. But once we got over 500 members in our monthly membership, I knew that we needed to have other coaches, because me and my co-founder couldn't be responsible for answering all the questions. And she had other things going on in her life, and she wanted to start her own coaching program outside of Flourish and Thrive Academy. So we had to really work this out to figure out how we can sort of give her the space to do that and free up her time to deal with the family stuff that was going on with her and on a personal level. And also to give me the the space to actually be creative and do what I'm best at. And so, and also I think the most important part was being able to give our community the best amount of support, because that's how you keep people. And that's how you continue to build recurring revenue, is by getting them results, giving them value, and keeping them in the group. Because, ultimately, like, I tell people this all the time. This is like, sounds so like hardcore, but like, I'm not in business to be someone's friend necessarily. I'm friendly and nice, and like, I like to be inspiring and encouraging, but I'm here to get them results. Like, I'm not here to like pat their back and tell them that their procrastination is like serving them, because it's not. Like, I'm here to whip them into shape and help them move their business forward. And when the more structure you can create around that, and if you're not a structure person, find people who can do it, or like, you can give the vision and they can create it, because that's the most important thing. And I feel like that's how we've been able to scale. And at every level, you're going to have to completely revamp your process, because the problems you had when you were a low six-figure business or a mid six-figure business change, like, as you scale. And once you start getting to seven figures, that completely changes too. And it's always changing. And then I'm sure once you get to multiple seven figures, it changes.
I want to talk more about Flourish and Thrive. What year did you start it?
I started in 2012, and I can't remember now, because I keep saying, I told my social media person that we started in 2014. That's not true. We started in 2012. I launched my, let's see, my new jewelry company. I was in business probably about 2.5 years by the time we launched. And that business was doing phenomenally. And I had a lot of designers asking for consulting. And I would say, hey, you know, and my consulting fees weren't even that expensive at the time. I was charging $1,000 a month. They got a couple of calls with me, unlimited email, and they're like, it's too expensive. So I'm like, how can I teach how I would support someone in with 6 months of consulting in a group program? So that was sort of the idea to launch this group program or course, I should say, and turn it into and start building a community around that of support, because that was the thing that I felt like I missed, was that support piece. And camaraderie in my industry. Mm-hmm. And that was like the impetus. And it's turned into, you know, we have multiple courses now, we have a membership, we have a high ticket group coaching program. And I call it high ticket because it's not $49 a month. You know, these people are investing hundreds of dollars a month in their business selves. And it's evolved a lot. But that's, it started in 2014. And it's changed so much since we started.
How many members do you have?
We have about 800 members in our monthly membership. We have, at the time this is being recorded, we're shooting for about 100 members by the end of the year, but we have about 55 members in our coaching program. And we've run thousands of people have taken our course. I would say, like, if I had to do the quick math, probably about 3,000.
Okay. And in your early days as getting started, because I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs, even seven-figure entrepreneurs, that are getting to the point where they think, okay, now is the time I want to build a community so I can give back or just create a tribe for whatever reason. So in your early days of Flourish and Thrive, what were some of the products and services that you started to offer? What worked for you and what didn't work?
In the early days of Flourish and Thrive?
Yeah.
So one of the things I didn't want to do, because there was a lot of people at that time, I didn't realize it at the time. I had an idea. I found that we had maybe a few competitors, but I wasn't so worried about that because their focus was slightly different. I knew that I wanted to focus just on the jewelry designer. I called it designer. Then I found out there's this word called maker that people identify themselves with. So we brought into jewelry designer and maker community, or jewelry brand, independent jewelry brand. We launched with a course. I pre-sold it to make sure that there was interest to a list of 300 people that I literally organically built, just like reaching out to people I knew mm-hmm. that were just starting out who had found me. And then we spent a little time list building and launched that first course. It is still the signature course that we do because when you're building a business in the jewelry industry and any, quite frankly, any fashion brand or accessories brand, it's pretty much the same formula. You need to have a message. You need to have a story. You need to have the right mindset. You need to have your collection and your pricing right. And you need to know how to market and sell the work. I mean, that's like, it's like business 101 for you know, fashion and jewelry based companies who have a product, and probably almost any type of company, but specifically in this industry. And so that's that course we've had, we've redone it several times, and it's amazing now. It's like so good. But then, you know, originally when I wanted to start the company, I wanted a course on systems because that was the thing that was so hard for me to do. And I'm like, that's the one thing that we should have done so much earlier and things would have changed. And having a strong understanding of how to look at your financial reports and how to inform like how your cash flow is affecting your ability to survive. But that's the one thing that no one who is creative wants to really look at because it's scary to them. They don't understand it. And so I launched the marketing course first, and then we followed it up with this like business course. And we still have both. I would say the marketing course is always the best. And so we're considering doing a couple of things here, maybe kind of rolling the courses into membership. We launched our membership 3 years ago because our community was growing so quickly that we had a free group for a long time for graduates, but our capacity and ability to be able to really support them anymore had diminished because it just got too big. And so we decided to launch into paid membership, which a bunch of the original people were not totally stoked on. And they, some of them came and some of them didn't, but that's fine. You know, hopefully they've evolved. I've heard from a lot of them recently saying like, I want to come back in, you know, I'm just working on X, Y, and Z. Because the support really is so good, but to really give value to people on an ongoing basis, like we need to hire team members. Like I can't do it. And I'm in business to make money. Like this isn't a charity. So, I need to live and my team needs to live and I need to be able to hire like top tier talent in order to give the best support. So, we decided to do this paid membership. It was a little bit of a rough transition. We had a lot of people revolting. We had a couple members of our community who started their own thing when they were the biggest ones who were saying that that these people, I can't believe that they want to charge us money, you know, to like support them kind of thing. And then they started their own thing and started charging money. I don't think they survived. I don't even know where they are anymore. But it's been an interesting evolution. And the business model ultimately has, like, I would say it hasn't, like, radically changed a ton because we still have some of the same stuff we started with, like, online courses. But what we're really trying to focus on now is community building and taking people from, you know, having these sort of like hobby businesses or side hustle businesses or businesses that are doing okay to really thriving businesses with this higher level of support where they're going to get monthly coaching and, you know, group, like the group think of a mastermind. It's a little bit different, but the group think of a mastermind and, you know, support from, you know, like the top tier of what we do here at Flourish and Thrive. And people are getting insane results. And so, I'm sure there will be another evolution soon. You know, I think my next iteration is to really create a true mastermind where we're meeting three times a year of people who are already doing about 300 grand in their business, in their jewelry, fashion, or accessories company. And they want to maybe cross that seven-figure mark, or they want to learn how to set their business up in a way where they can pull themselves out more and travel or do some of the things that they love. Because I can tell you, I was just talking to a designer on Monday who was in the space that I was for many, many years. And she's like, I just don't know how to do it. And I'm like, let me help you. And then she's like hesitant, that investment, it's just so much. But the second, I wish that I would have known earlier on in my career how valuable hiring consultants and coaches are to your ability to grow rapidly. I don't know if your audience has experienced this, Chris, but seriously, it's the best thing ever.
I think so. You know, a coach or a mentor in any aspect, it's so powerful just to get their perspective. It's just like being in a bad relationship. You know, your friends always tell you, you know, you're in a bad relationship and you're like, no, we can work it out, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then it ends up going down the tubes and you tell your friends they were right. A coach and a mentor does that very well as you grow as an entrepreneur, for sure. I want to talk about building location independence and having that type of lifestyle. I know that you go a bit back and forth between California and New York, but also spend 40% of your time traveling with business and pleasure or whatever it may be. So I'm curious if you can share a bit about like some of the, we talked about it earlier, but some of the ways that you structure your business and life to make sure that you have that location independence and that you can be in Croatia on an island and still learning and growing and things keep running, or be in New York or California seeing your family.
Absolutely. I mean, the start, I mean, I talked about this earlier, but the start was really like setting up everything that I do virtually. Like I don't have an office that's outside of my home. Because I wanted my overhead to be low. So that was like the first thing. I didn't feel like I had to be there. And I have one person besides my jewelry company, jewelry team that works in New York City. But everyone else is somewhere else in the world, mostly in the United States, just because we work on U.S. hours. But my project manager slash marketing strategist is in Vietnam now. And it's awesome because she wanted to travel and she takes her son, you know, to these like awesome places. Because I think the biggest thing at number one for me is that it allows me, like if I'm in, you know, want to take 5 weeks off to go to Europe, to go to Croatia and then travel and have fun in the interim. I can do that. And I just empower my team to actually make decisions. And so setting up the virtual team, like empowering your team, like those are the ways that my business has kept running. And teaching them and mentoring them on how to make decisions without me. So they don't always make the right decision and we have to sometimes make mistakes, but you have to be okay with that. Because, and sometimes, you know, it's like, I care. So sometimes it's not like awesome, but at the same time, I know personally that the part of the reason why I could never achieve this in my first business was because I was holding on to everything so tightly. And so things are going to, you know, get messed up or whatever, but you have to be able to set that up. And so for product-based business, for me, like the most important thing was really having someone who could check in with my production team here while I was gone, or a system for that, whether it be email or phone I've had to train like actually my manufacturers a lot because they're so old school. They don't even like know how to text pictures of things. I'm not kidding. But, like half of them don't even have email. And I'm not kidding when I say that.
Wow.
Really cool. But they're good. They're amazing jewelers. Teaching, you know, my executive assistant slash production managers over the years, how to, you know, quality control vet, run a project on time and make sure that we're getting it done to my customers for my jewelry business on time. So that's been super key. And that's the most important thing, because in an online business, it's easy to have a virtual team and to be able to travel because you find amazing talent all over. But for a business, it actually requires like something to happen in a specific location. I think having someone on the ground is really important for that.
What would you say, Tracy, is the difference from your experience between a five-figure mindset, a six-figure mindset, and a seven-figure mindset?
I think that probably five-figure, they don't believe in investing in themselves or their business. And so instead, they think they can't afford help. And so instead of stepping into doing like the $1,000 an hour work, they're doing $5 an hour stuff that you could outsource to a VA in the Philippines, like loading pictures to their website or doing the website tweaks that you can find someone on Fiverr or Odesk or FreeUp or one of those companies to do for you for a lot less money than you would be making if you're focusing on building your business. I think six figure, it's, you know, finding the right people and, letting go, because I think that was the hardest thing for me in the beginning, was to like let go of the reins, you know, to let it happen. There's like a sense of trust, I think, that happens to that. When you start getting to the multiple six figure, because Flourish and Thrive Academy, like we had our first year of profits, we made $6,000. Like we were in business for 6 months that year. I invested 20 grand to get the tech done and hire people to tell me what to do because I didn't want to try and spend my time figuring it out. Because I was so busy at the time with the other things that I was doing to survive. So I knew that like once we had proof of concept and I knew that this was going to work, that to me was saying that the business was profitable in the first year. Not very, very profitable, but somewhat. That when we launched the next time that we would have a six-figure year. And so we had hired, it was me and Robin, And we had hired a one virtual assistant, and that was Peter. And he did all the emails and all the other stuff that kind of ran the business. And then the team just started to grow from there. And so you can get across a six-figure mark literally with one person who's super who balances out your skill set. So if you're the tech person, get the creative person who can do the other stuff. But I would say most creative visionaries aren't the tech people. they're the other side, the idea people. So get someone who can balance your skill set that can take a bunch of stuff off your plate, because that's how you're going to cross that six-figure mark. Multiple six figures, sometimes you're going to need more than one person. And I think it's really about clearly defining responsibilities of who's going to do what and trying to break those down into, you know, specific, maybe roles is the right way to put it. Like, you know, you're handling this job and you're handling this job, and creating a system to sort of track all the stuff that you're doing. And I think getting to seven figures was really about, for me, having a secondhand person. And it's been hard because the person I hired as our customer service person kind of rose up into that role because she's a superstar, Abby. And that's even shifting a little bit because the role's gotten really big for her. And so we're talking about how we can restructure it or figure out what the next phase of that looks like as we've kind of crossed this seven figure mark. I think the one thing that's been really valuable in the last 8 months that I've done is put her in charge of the revenue, which sounds silly because the CEO should be in charge of the revenue. But when you have, I'm looking at it all the time, but like my thing was like, here's our goal. Like, are we hitting it? And we need to know way farther in advance if we're not hitting it than 2 days before the month's ending, if we're not hitting our monthly goal, and then just being reactive about it. And so I think, quite honestly, that one shift in having someone else be accountable with you for the money has been huge, because now we're always brainstorming, okay, what can we do? How can we figure out the back end a little bit better so that we're serving people better and giving them what they actually want? And how can we communicate that better? And so it's definitely, we have not perfected it, but it's definitely been so helpful and like helping us cross that mark.
Incredible.
And I have seven figures yet, so I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, incredible, Tracy. We're going to wrap up the show there. I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you for sharing your tips and your tricks and all your wisdom with us. We really appreciate it. If the listeners want to reach out and learn more about what you guys have going on, where's the best place they can do that at?
Yeah, so if you're in the fashion or accessory space, check us out over at flourishthriveacademy.com. Or if you just want to connect with me, you can find me at tracymatthews.com or hit me up at Tracy Matthews New York on Instagram and Twitter. I'm not so much on the Twitter, but you can find me on Instagram. I like to post pictures and chat about business stuff and share my jewelry. So super fun.
Awesome. Thanks again, Tracy. And listeners, we want to thank you guys for coming on the show, and we'll see you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks for having me.
Hey, listeners, thanks for joining us once again. We wanted to remind you about our high-performance productivity coaching and our annual Get Shit Done live retreat in Thailand. Both are designed for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs to get a lot of work done rapidly. And whether you need some personal coaching while working away at home or a retreat in Thailand where you can get out of your normal routine and surround yourself with other successful entrepreneurs, we have those options for you. Check out all the details at thebusinessmethod.com, and we'll see you on the next podcast.